From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, the native village of Port Hyden is inching closer to establishing a local fish processing plant. Also, scientists warn that halibut numbers could shrink along the coast of the U.S. and Canada if fishing continues at the same rate. Then and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
The native village of Port Hyden is getting closer to opening a local fish processing plant. It's a project that's been in the works for several years. The idea is to give area fishermen an opportunity to fish locally during early and late salmon runs. KDLG's Avery Little has more.
Right here is going to be two freezer units, and then that's going to be where they box it up.
Jimmy Christensen is a commercial fisherman from Port Hyden. He's standing in what the village hopes will soon be a fully operational fish processing plant. There are still stacks of construction equipment inside, but the walls are painted and the building looks nearly finished. The target is to have all the renovations complete and the freezers installed in time for the 2018 salmon season. The Meshick Processing Center is funded largely through the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and through the village itself. Adrienne Christensen is a consultant with the native village of Port Hyden. She says the village has high hopes for this endeavor.
The hope is that we can have a longer fishing season that's not as hectic. And the hope is that we can pay our fishermen higher and more fair per pound for their fish, and that our workers get paid a decent amount, and that those dollars will stay in Port Hyden.
The village anticipates that with 6 to 8 workers, the plant will be able to process 10,000 pounds per day at max capacity. Adrienne Christensen says that they are marketing the fish within the U.S.
We've had a lot of chefs. We've had people that are just really interested in getting a good product, individuals. We've had interest from a lot of different demographics, but it's all U.S.
Currently, the handful of permit holders from Port Hyden mostly fish in Ugashik for a month during peak sockeye season. The goal of the Meshick Fish Processing Plant is to provide a market for these fishermen during the shoulder seasons from May to September. This year's operation may be shorter as the village works out the kinks of running a new business. Jimmy Christensen is one of the fishermen looking forward to being on the water longer and closer to home. Fishing silvers was something he used to do from Port Hyden over a decade ago when more frequent air freight service allowed him to ship fish out more easily.
We used to get anywhere between 20 and 40,000 pounds apiece of silvers. That's a big income for per person for a village. I mean, and whoever they hire, crew, and now we don't have it. And so this would be a big improvement for us.
Adrienne Christensen says that it will be several years before the plant turns a profit. But when it does, the tribally owned business will put the proceeds back into services for the Port Hyden community. In Port Hyden, I'm Avery Lill.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Scientists monitoring halibut say there could be a decline in the bottom fish along the coast of the U.S. and Canada in upcoming years if the current level of fishing continues. The International Pacific Halibut Commission oversees management of the fish along the coast from Alaska to California. Commissioners had an interim meeting November 28th through 29th in Seattle and heard about this year's catch and the latest estimates of halibut stocks. Scientists found fewer younger halibut in survey fishing done up and down the coast this year that could signal a decrease in halibut numbers and what's caught in the commercial fishery in upcoming years. Ian Stewart is a quantitative scientist with the commission.
What we are starting to see here is a projection that we've got fewer young fish coming into the stock. And that's very consistent with the set line survey dropping in terms of numbers. And it's also why we're really not seeing it yet in the commercial fishery, because that fishery is still largely dominated by these better year classes that are still present in the fishery catch, but will be decreasing in the fishery catch over the next several years.
The IPHC survey found a decrease from last year in the number of halibut caught. Coastwide, that drop was 24% from 2016, with some variation between different parts of the coast. Meanwhile, catch rates actually increased in the commercial fishery in some areas. Coastwide commercial catches this year topped 26 million pounds. Fishing fleets targeting other species caught another 6 million pounds of halibut as bycatch. Staff scientists don't recommend catch levels to the U.S. and Canadian commissioners. Instead, they present the likelihood of future declines or increases in fish stocks based on different catch limits. Because fish numbers are dropping, most areas of the coast could see decreases in the commercial and charter catch limits next year if the commission decides to stay with the same level of fishing intensity as 2017. Commissioner Linda Behnken of Alaska asks for more clarity on the impacts of those catch limits for the future.
It does seem as if the reductions we're seeing you calling for here or indicated are really driven by recruitment and the fact that there's not small fish moving in to replace the bigger fish or to recruit into the fishery. And so I think part of what we're going to have to understand when we take action at the annual meeting is how sensitive the population is and the future projections to the fishing intensity levels.
The commission will decide catch limits at their annual meeting in Portland, Oregon, in late January. They'll also be considering various regulatory changes and setting the season dates for next year.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Financial analysts say a British Columbia mining company is struggling to survive. Imperial Metals owns the Red Chris mine in the watershed of the Stikine, a river vital to Southeast Alaska fisheries. As KSDK's June Leffler reports, it raises concerns for critics of transboundary mining.
Financial analysts say Imperial Metals is in a dire financial situation. Its stock is on a steady decline. It's operating with a negative cash flow, and it has $800 million worth of debt coming down the pipe in just over a year. Imperial Metals did not respond to an interview request, but its financial standing is detailed in recent press releases. These notices say the company is restructuring and has extended the due dates for certain loans. Jamie Katsoukas is an analyst at Moody's Investors Service, which rates companies' risk of defaulting. She tracks Canadian metal and mining companies. Her firm recently came out with a negative outlook report on Imperial Metals. She says Imperial's top investors are not backing out. They will funnel up to $40 million into the company. Still, Katsoukas doesn't think that's a game changer.
They would get $40 million. It would give them some room in terms of having cash available to them, but with $800 million due, they'll have to look at alternative financing as well.
She says operations have been poor at the Red Chris mine because it is extracting lower-grade ore and getting less of it than last year. For Mount Polly, the forest fires over the summer stifled operations, shutting the mine down for 2 weeks with a slow recovery. Imperial Metals also owns the British Columbia Ruddock Creek Project, which is undergoing exploration, and Huckleberry Mine, where operations are on hold. Katsoukas says this financial strain comes despite rising copper prices.
I think what's happening with Imperial is really an anomaly. This year, we've seen increased cash flow, increased earnings, just based on the run-up of the copper price.
The company's other operating mine, Mount Polly, has become a symbol for mine critics. In 2014, its dam broke, spilling millions of gallons of mine waste, rock, and sand. The waste, called tailings, poured into nearby lakes and the Cariboo River. Some environmentalists, fishermen, and tribal leaders worry that similar disasters could contaminate the Stikine and other rivers and tributaries in Southeast Alaska. That includes the Red Chris, a copper and gold mine in northwest British Columbia, which began operations in July of 2015. Its tailings dam is upstream from the watershed of the Stikine River, which empties into the ocean near Wrangell and Petersburg. Heather Hardcastle is a spokeswoman for Salmon Beyond Borders. The group advocates for clean waters that support sustainable fishing. The group wants to see more transboundary regulation so that Canadian mines will be held accountable for any damage done to Alaska waters.
Because where is the money
going to come from to make sure that this mine is first of all, operating in a responsible way, which we contend it currently is not, but then also how is it going to be fully reclaimed if this company goes bankrupt?
She wants to see regulation that would keep operators on the hook for pollution from abandoned mines.
So that companies have to put up a large enough reclamation bond to cover reclamation in the event of bankruptcy.
She points to British Columbia's Tulsiaquatchief mine, which was abandoned in the 1950s. It continues draining acidic water into the Tulsiqua River, which is a tributary of the Taku River, which empties into the ocean near Juneau. Alaska's top political leaders agree more accountability in transboundary mining is needed. Alaska's governor, lieutenant governor, and congressional delegation recently asked our federal government to join in the fight. In Wrangell, I'm June Loeffler.
A young Kodiak local is passionate about combining art with environmental education. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center recently featured some of her fish-centric works. For her senior thesis at Reed College in Portland, Oregon, studio art major Layla Pyle taught salmon ecology to a fourth-grade classroom. She says that involved 6 weeks of science lessons and 4 weeks of art.
So we were reflecting on what we learned and also taking into account how salmon are going extinct in the Pacific Northwest, basically, and kind of reflecting on that and trying to make art to send to people, actually, to kind of, like, raise awareness about this issue.
Pyle says in her six-week curriculum, she covered the salmon ecosystem and the cycle of predator and prey, but she wanted to delve into conservation issues, too.
I felt like we needed to do art to reflect about that and actually I found that that was a way to help kids process some of this really intense environmental information that they need to know, but you can't just hand them as facts because no one knows what to do with that kind of thing.
Pyle, who grew up in Kodiak, says when she moved to Portland, she found salmon to be a common denominator. She says Alaska and the Pacific Northwest can teach one another.
For Portland or the Columbia River area, looking at Alaska and the way that we've not dammed all of our rivers and still have larger salmon runs and seeing what we need to do to kind of reverse some of the damages down there. And also up here, learning lessons in Alaska to not deplete our salmon runs the way that the Pacific Northwest has.
As part of her thesis, Pyle put together a series of etchings.
All of my images together went into a book, which is four stories all together. And the four stories tell four different perspectives on salmon and climate change in the Pacific Northwest and what the issue is and what people are doing about it.
Pyle says she plans to pursue environmental conservation through education, although what that might look like at this point, she's not sure.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KSTK's June Loeffler in Wrangell, KDLG's Avery Lill in Dillingham, and KFSK's Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.